That's Sam Mellinger's music. Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. How are you, Nate?
Yeah, a little clear the windpipe out there a little bit. There we go. I'm doing well, man. And the Chiefs just keep rolling. And they are 10-1 now. And they give us something to pick apart every game. And they give their opponents a reason to feel like they're in most of these games, even though it kind of feels like the outcome is still a foregone conclusion. Does it not?
Yeah. It's just when a team is this good, the games are so much more about that team than they are the opponent. And I say that without disregarding the Bucs, who are a very good team. And if they make the Super Bowl, they would be a worthy representative of the NFC. But it's about the Chiefs. And they have this gear that nobody else does, and that's 17-0 in the first quarter. And then sometimes they can drift a little bit, and that's, you know, needing – it's funny, that last drive, you know, that's not going to go down as, like, Patrick Mahomes in the clutch, right? Like, you know, it's not like the drive last week against the Raiders in the last minute 43. But that was, you know, just as – maybe not just as, because they were down against the Raiders, but that is an extremely clutch drive as well. And to call, you know, this is what I wrote about. I was just fascinated with, you know, it's 2nd and 9 out of the 2-minute warning. Bucks are out of timeouts. You know, you can melt all but maybe 25 seconds of the clock. So that's your option. You can give Tom Brady the ball at maybe the 10-yard line or so, with 25 seconds left, no timeouts, and needing a field goal to put it into overtime. Or you can go gutsy and start calling passes, which is what the Chiefs did, which I'm all in favor of. I mean, I err on the side of aggressive in these situations. Easier to do, by the way, when your contribution to the game is a column and not you're not the head coach. But I love those calls, and especially that 3rd down one was next level gutsy. That 2nd down call was basically a run, although it required Edwards-Helaire to make a nice adjustment to make the catch. But, you know, 3rd down to move the pocket and have him step up like that and throw against the sideline, I thought was an incredible call. gutsy to do it in the moment. You know, and look, you've got Mahomes, you've got Tyreek Hill. Those are good guys to trust, but that was a hell of a moment. So, like, it's weird. Like, the Chiefs were the rocket ship in the first quarter of just blitz, you know, not, I'm not going to use that term, but sprinting out ahead. And then they also showed some guts and some toughness, you know, protecting the lead late. It's weird. I mean, I think you can be impressed by both those things, but I understand being frustrated by both those things as well. Like, that could have been a 42-10 game. You know, after the first quarter, but you know, they had some problems in the red zone, you know, the strip sack, like all those things. But still, man, they've got so many different ways to win. That's the other thing. Like it's not a narrow path for them. They don't have, you know, one way to go. You know, if you push them off their line, that's the thing. Like, I know I'm rambling here, but I keep thinking about this with this particular Chiefs team when compared to, you know, basically the pre-Mahomes teams, or even 2018, those teams, they were a little bit different, but each of those teams had a kind of a specific way that they had to win. And if you push them off that a little bit, it was really hard for them to get back on the tracks. And this team, and last year, just has so many different ways to win. They can win a shootout. They can win, you know, with the defense holding a team to 20 or fewer points. They can win on special teams. They've done that this year. I know they've had special teams problems, but they've also won with special teams. They have so many different ways to beat you.
Okay, I want to get back to the decisions that you wrote about. You touched on the decision to throw it a couple times on that last drive of the game. We'll get back to that in a second. We'll get back to the first decision that you broke down as well, but first I want to ask you about a decision that the Bucks made. How baffled were you that the Bucks decided to try to defend Tyreek Hill in single coverage in the first half of that game?
Stunned. Maybe try it once. You know,
maybe Mahomes won't notice, or maybe they'll miss on the connection, you know.
Well, the thing I keep thinking about, when you were playing this team, there's no good answers.
Right.
And so, like, if you double Tyreek, then maybe we're talking about, God, you want to give, you know, some linebacker some help against Travis Kelce or whatever. So I'm aware that there's no good answers, but my God, don't let your guy get torched for 203 yards and a backflip in the first quarter, you know, without making some adjustments. And it was Davis that was in man coverage on the last play too, wasn't it? On the third down, third and seven. I think it was the same guy. I think it was Carlton Davis in man coverage, and he was playing off, which is a weird thing to do. Maybe that's like, you know, he's been traumatized. But like, I don't know why you're playing off in that situation. You give up a touchdown, give up a touchdown. But you know, you're trying to defend the pass. So yeah, I mean, that was, look, Todd Bowles has a deserved, really good reputation as a defensive coach, and they had some injuries in the secondary, which also, you know, kind of limited some of their options. But God, like, make an adjustment. Yeah, that was stunning.
Yeah, I mean, I told Jake earlier, to me, it's I act like this is simple. You're right, there is no good answer, but there's definitely a worse answer.
You know, yeah.
there are some answers that are more wrong, and the idea is, if you take away Travis Kelce, let's say you don't take away Travis Kelce, he's going to eat you up 15 yards at a time. If you don't take away Tyreek Hill, he's going to change the scoreboard.
Yeah,
you know, every time he touches it, he's going for 70. And so to me, like, job number one has to be, well, we can't let that happen, because then it's just off to the races. And they didn't just let it happen once. Like, they just kept letting it happen. I couldn't believe it. But so let's go back to the first decision that you brought up in your column, because I want to get into this. The decision by Andy Reid to kick the field goal on fourth and goal from the one. I was stunned, just because Patrick Mahomes usually pleads his case there, and they usually seem to listen to Patrick Mahomes, and he was really mad, and they went off, they kicked the field goal. What did you make of Andy Reid's decision there instead of going for it so close to the goal line?
Yeah, I hated the call. I'm never going to like a 19-yard field goal. I'm just, you know, maybe there's a hypothetical where I'm in on it, but I'm never going to like a 19-yard field goal. I'm never going to like a 19-yard field goal with this offense. And look, like, maybe here's one point that is absolutely in Andy Reid's favor there is, first drive of the game. So I do get that. I get wanting to get points on the first drive just to, you know, establish something in that moment. That I totally understand. But I also know that if you go for that, and this isn't how it's done, obviously, but if you go for that 100 times, you're going to get it more than 50. So the numbers are in your favor to make this 7-0 instead of 3-0. And I also love going for it in that situation, because the worst thing that can happen is they take over at the one. And if they take over at the one, I get they've got Ronald Jones, and you know, that guy just ran it was 99, wasn't it? 98, 99-yard touchdown. Was it 2 weeks ago? Whatever.
Yep, so 2 weeks ago.
I get all that. But I just think that you have Patrick Mahomes on your side. You have Travis Kelce. You have Sammy Watkins, who you signed in large part because of his effectiveness in the red zone. You know, you just have a lot of things going in your favor there. All that being said, that's not an egregious decision. I'm never going to agree with a 19-yard field goal, but I can understand why that decision was made in that moment. You know, here's another point for Andy Reid. The Bucs have a really good run defense. So you know you're probably not going to be able to run between the tackles in that situation. They already tried, you know, the Black Pearl, the double lateral tight end throws to the quarterback play. So maybe they felt like, you know, they'd already burned one of those, whatever, you know, fancy plays or whatever. They didn't want to do it again. I get all that, but my God, like, if I'm the defense, I'm hoping that you kick the field goal right there.
Travis Kelce should have run that one in, by the way. And
yes,
I'm saying that
he trucked.
Right. He had one defender there that's like half his size, and it's like you that guy is not bringing you down.
Yeah. You know what's funny, that in the post game, Mahomes, like as he does, like he's pretty terrible in interviews when he's asked about like goofy stuff. Mm-hmm. But God, when you ask him about specific football stuff, he's awesome. And he's awesome when you talk about football stuff. And then he had mentioned that like right before that play on the sideline or whatever, because that was Kelsey's first option, run it if you can. And you know, Mahomes had said like right before that play, hey man, if I'm open, throw it to me. If I'm open, throw it to me. And he was kind of open. I mean, he was definitely open, but there was a defender in between, you know? And if you watch that replay, and I'm sure you have, but Kelsey's reaction to it is just like, it's like his world is crushed when that ball gets. I don't know what celebration he was going to do having thrown a touchdown to Patrick Mahomes, but it was going to be a damn party.
Yeah, he ran. He threw that just because he wanted so bad to throw that. You know, like, wanted so bad to throw a touchdown pass to Patrick Mahomes, and he, you know, he could have walked that ball into the end zone, but he just wanted to throw it so bad. And you know what? We all wanted to see it. Like, we all wanted to see him catch
totally.
It, and we all wanted to see the celebration that was going to go with it. But then instead, Andy Reid got to have the little dig at him about, well, maybe that's why, you know, he didn't stick as a quarterback. And it was good stuff. It was fun. Hey, we're going to take a break. We're going to talk more with Sam Mellinger on the Chiefs. And we'll talk about the decision to throw it late in that last drive of the game and more right after this.
Yeah, well, I mean, that just comes down to execution. I mean, we had the play with Travis designed and ran the way we wanted it to be ran, and we had the options and the availability that we wanted. And we've ran plays like that all year long. We're doing different motions and different type of stuff like that, and they've worked out. And when you play a good defense and you don't execute in the red zone and you get field goals instead of touchdowns, the game stays closer than you want it to be. And so that's just about execution and us just making sure that we execute whenever we get our opportunities.
The Johnny's Tavern discount, 27% off whole specialty pizzas, dine-in only at all the Johnny's today because the Chiefs scored 27 yesterday in a win over the Bucks. Sam Mellinger is with us. And isn't it crazy to listen to Patrick Mahomes talk there about lack of execution in the red zone? Tyreek Hill had 269 yards receiving in this game. I saw a stat on Twitter that the New York Jets have failed to achieve 269 yards of offense six times out of their 11 games. And I sent a text message to Curtis Siebold because this is the kind of research that he enjoys. I wonder how many times an NFL team in 2020 has failed to get as many yards as Tyreek Hill had in yesterday's game. And Tyreek Hill, Sam, still has a chip on his shoulder. He tweeted a couple weeks ago after a big game, am I still not a number one? And, you know, him and Patrick Mahomes are going back on that. And then yesterday he made another joke about being a return specialist again, didn't he?
Yeah, that was the reference to it was Jalen Ramsey, mm-hmm. right, before the Jags game. Mm-hmm. Was that two seasons ago? He said, yeah, he's an all-pro, but a pro bowler, I think maybe at that point, but as a return specialist. Don't get it twisted, I think Jalen Ramsey emphasized. So, yeah, that was wild. I saw, they showed this on the broadcast, right, that in the last 2.5 seasons, Patrick Mahomes has had 300 yards passing in the first half three times, and the rest of the league has done it twice. And then I think he tweeted this during the game, but I just saw it this morning. Ed Werder had a stat that Tyreek Hill's 203 yards receiving. That was at the end of the first quarter. That was more than any receiver all season in the game. But these guys are a little bit delusional, and I mean that as like sort of an athlete compliment. There's, you know, I guess Michael Jordan has become the standard for, you know, delusion when it comes to just creating out of thin air these slights. I mean, most famously, he did not get cut from the basketball team as a sophomore in high school, but used that to drive him to six rings and maybe the best basketball career of all time. And they've got this too. You know, Patrick Mahomes, like, you know, counting to four against Lamar Jackson and counting to 10 against Mitch Trubisky and Tyreek Hill pulling out some line by a guy who doesn't play for that team anymore, you know, from 2 years ago, to say, like, I'm just a return specialist, so of course I'm going to get single coverage. It's pretty remarkable, really. I mean, like, I get it. Like, you're the Super Bowl champs. You know, Tyreek is now, I believe, leading the NFL in receiving yards.
Yep.
and he's got to be near that in touchdowns if he's not leading. And, you know, he's got the contract extension. They're 10-1. You're getting a lot of flowers. You know what I mean? So maybe you have to, you know, dig back a couple years ago and act like those slights are still current. There's not a person in the football universe who does not believe that Tyreek Hill is a number one receiver. There is not a single person who believes that. But keep playing the card, man.
Hey, listen, Tom Brady did it for 20-some years, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's how you sustain greatness, man. You got to hold on to whatever it is that got you there in the first place. And, yes, Tyreek Hill is first in receiving yards. He's the only player in the NFL over 1,000 yards receiving, and he leads the NFL in touchdown receptions as well. He's two ahead of Adam Thielen, Mike Evans, and Devontae Adams, who are all tied for second with 11. Do you know who the second leading receiver in the NFL is right now, Sam?
Is it Kelsey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I knew he was close. That is ridiculous.
Right?
Yeah. Next time, after next week, we're going to see Travis Kelsey in the post game talk about nobody thinks I'm a number one receiver.
Right, right.
And that's why for 104 yards or whatever it's going to be next week.
Oh, yeah, man.
It's something else, man. Like, I feel like we talk about this specific point every week, but I hope people don't take this stuff for granted. I mean, it's and I'm saying that to Chiefs fans who have suffered more than most with their quarterbacks over the years. But, you know, to see these guys do it, it's not perfect. You know, it's rarely going to be perfect. We see flashes of perfect, but it's not going to be perfect for four quarters. But, God, they're fun to watch. I mean, it's just they are one of the most fun football teams that I can remember to watch.
So Jake just printed this off for me. Jake, I didn't need to text Curtis Seabolt. Jake Gutierrez is the stat man from CBS.
I slightly took that as an insult.
Well, you know what? You should. But I figured, you know, Curtis would like to actually go back through every single box score. I wanted, you know,
right.
Like,
yeah,
Jake just printed off a list.
See, it's like, you text Curtis, I could do this in like maybe 2.5-3 minutes.
36 yeah. times in 2020, an NFL team has had fewer yards than Tyreek Hill yesterday.
Jeez.
36
by the way,
times.
That was Jake's version of I'm just a return specialist.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I just push nice. Buttons here, Sam. That's all I do. I'm a button nice. Pusher.
Yeah. That is how Jake stays great, you know, for all these years. Right. He holds on to the slights. And what you were saying about how fun this team is, I was telling Jake and Steven earlier that, I mean, I had a conversation with my kids yesterday, 10 and 8 years old. You know, you kids these days. But I'm like, yeah. do you guys understand what you're watching right now? And clearly by the look on their face, the answer was no.
Sure. Well, that's fair, though, because I don't understand what I'm watching half the time.
But you, like...
Yes, I have pains. I have great pains that John Elway dealt me.
Like, I know
when I was 10.
I know my kids and their friends know that Patrick Mahomes is a really big deal because, like, one time one of his friends asked me, like, you've met Patrick Mahomes, you know? And you go, yeah.
Right.
Oh my God, really? Like, they know he's a star. But, like, when we're watching the game itself, I don't think they get why.
They don't have the pains.
They don't have the contrast.
They don't know what the other side looks like. Right? So how can you know what you right. have with this
right.
if you don't know what it feels like for John Elway to rip your heart out, or Elvis Gerback to puke all over himself, or for the offensive coordinator to give the ball... Yeah, not to give the ball to Marcus Allen, you know, against the Colts. And let's put it on Bono's shoulders. Hey, at 0 degrees out here, coach.
My poor kids had to listen to me. Because I have, as I've told you many times, I am in possession of Paul Hackett's starter jacket from when he was the offensive coordinator of the Chiefs, which is a hilariously long story.
It's a good one.
But it's an awesome thing to have. And I love that jacket. And I wear it all the time. And I was explaining to my kids last night, this jacket represents the frustrations that all Chiefs fans carry with them for decades, you know? And you guys just get to watch this team win every close game. Because they have a quarterback and a brilliant offensive mind that we've been wanting our entire lives, and my kids are just looking at me like, "Eh, yeah."
So what, Dad?
if that jacket could talk, you know,
right? Yes,
that jacket's got some story. I went down. So the way I've been, you know, working on game days this year, my wife and kids watch the game downstairs, and then I'm kind of in our bedroom watching the game up here. So I go downstairs, you know, to get some water, snack, or whatever. And you know, maybe midway through the second quarter or something like that. I go down there. And, our six-year-old is like, the way he watches the game, he has a football and he just throws it to himself and makes like fake moves like between the plays in the game.
It's a good kid.
He runs his own plays. And anyway, so I just looked at him and I was like, dude, I've watched a lot of football in my life, and I've never seen somebody backflip into the end zone. Like, you need to appreciate this, right? Like, in some ways, I feel like it, and I certainly wouldn't have felt like this when I was, you know, his age, 6 or 8 or 10, or really any age. But there's a certain like broader, grander, more thorough appreciation that people like us have. You know what I mean? Like, if this is all you know of the Chiefs, like, there's nowhere to, like, you can't go up, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, well, yeah, they're the best team and also the most entertaining. And all this, and this quarterback's going to be here, you know, when I go off to college, you know, because they're set up so well. Spoiled brats, man.
Yeah. And it's not him. You know, like we talked about Kelsey and Hill, the combination of the players and playmakers and personalities that they have on this team, it literally is the most entertaining professional sports team I've ever watched. And, yeah. and it's in our town. Like, that's what I keep trying to express to my kids. This stuff doesn't happen here.
Right. Like, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if this was the Arizona Cardinals or whatever, just a different team, but they, you transposed or transported Mahomes, Hill, Kelsey, all these guys, I would watch that team all the time. It would be appointment viewing.
Yes.
And all those things. But you're right. Like, it's here. And it, and also say this, like, it's not going to, Tyreek Hill is not going to be, the number one receiver forever. You know, like the salary cap is going to be a thing eventually. And, or he's just not going to be as fast at 33 as he is right now. So like, I also feel like these seasons, even when Mahomes is still the quarterback and still awesome, like we're going to look, but hey, do you remember when Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce were in their damn prime with this guy? Like, that's going to be a thing. You know what I mean? Because eventually,
100%.
Yeah, the especially next year, the next couple of years, the cap's going to go down. I mean, they're going to have some hard decisions.
Like Mahomes will be here when they put Kelsey's name on the Ring of Honor.
That is wow. I haven't thought.
I mean, think about when they put Kelsey up on the Ring of Honor, Patrick Mahomes will still be taking the snap, and they'll be like, "Hey, buddy, hey!"
And there'll be some guy that none of the three of us have ever heard of.
That's, the kids in
that's
seventh grade
the star
right now.
Of the team. But like, if you think about like the career of the Ben Roethlisbergers and Tom Brady's of the world, like especially the Tom Brady era, you can think of years where that offense was ridiculous in New England, and then years where it's like, you know what, they were more of a running team, and years where they had to kind of manage the game according to their defense. It is not the same team. Like, you almost like you can fall into this trap of thinking that it was the same team every year. But think about all the different skill position players. There were times when Brady was throwing to Gronk and Julian Edelman. You know, and there's years he was throwing to Randy Moss. And there's other years where, like, you couldn't name a receiver on the team.
Yeah, they'd turn their D-back into a wide receiver.
I mean, it's going to be like that, too. So you're right. We need to not just appreciate that you have Patrick Mahomes, but you have Patrick Mahomes loaded up with some of the best skill position players we've ever seen. I mean, it's just incredible. It's.
I do feel like this too. I feel like if Patrick Mahomes was here, and I think about this more than I should, and Tyreek Hill was playing for the Vikings or whatever, and Andy Reid was the coach of the Falcons, whatever. Like, I feel like you would think about. Could you imagine if Patrick Mahomes got to throw to Tyreek Hill? Like, how amazing would that be? Like, that arm and that speed. And could you imagine if they had the brain power of Andy Reid behind it? Like, all those things are together. I mean, if you know, people in Houston right now have opinions about having a really great quarterback without, you know, sort of the institutional support that Patrick Mahomes has. Like, it's the whole package, man, and it's a hell of a thing to watch.
Hey, Joe, look at Joe Burrow. That dude got hit and hit and hit and hit and hit and hit until he got it knocked out for the season. I mean, you know, you where a quarterback ends up can make a huge, huge difference. And it's like you said, it's all come together in Kansas City, and we get to watch it right now. We'll take a break. We'll talk more with Sam. There are still maybe, I don't know, maybe there still are, you know, some reasons to be concerned. Another close game. We can talk about that and more with Sam right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sam Mellinger joins us. Why'd you take that sack at the end of the Texas game, Sam?
Wait, what?
Did you watch the Iowa State Texas game at all? Like, I don't know how closely.
Yeah.
I'm doing the whole thing where I'm making fun of the fact that your name sounds a lot like the quarterback for Texas's name, even though it's not the same name.
I still can't figure out whether I want that guy to, you know, be the best quarterback of all time.
Fail and go away is what you want. Fail and go away.
Just go manage a hardware.
You do not want that guy in the NFL.
Well,
yeah.
I'll tell you what, that was a bad sack to take. That was a bad sack to take. Sam, what did you think of the NFL requiring that the Broncos play with no quarterbacks while the Ravens keep getting pushed back? Now they're going to play on a Tuesday. Is that a false equivalency? Do you see, is the NFL being unfair to one team or the other? Where do you come down on all this?
Yeah, I think it's unfair. Absolutely, I do. I don't have a lot of sympathy for the Broncos here. I want to be clear. You know, if you've got, you know, that's a failure on a few levels. Not just the, you know, at least reported, you know, no mask, no distancing, all those things, but also, you know, it's the Eagles, right? That have Josh McCown on the practice squad, like quarantined out in Texas or whatever. So institutionally, like that organization is not giving themselves any safety net. So I don't have sympathy for them. But yeah, it's absolutely unfair that the Ravens get pushed back and other teams. Remember the 49ers a few weeks back, like we're basically forced to play with, you know, practice squad guys. I mean, I get it. I get why they're doing it. The Ravens game, you know, the Ravens matter in a way that the Broncos don't this season. That's just true. And so I understand it from the league's perspective as well, that, you know, they're going to treat playoff teams differently than non-playoff teams. They want these games to be played and be in the books and, you know, count in records, and then we can have a postseason. So it's absolutely unfair, but I guess I also can understand why the league is doing it.
I'm thinking of when I was a senior in high school, I was the starting point guard on my basketball team, but I was definitely the worst player out of the five on the floor for us, right? And our center, my buddy Mike Hagan, was by far our best player. And I remember, like, I missed a practice because I missed a day of school for being sick. And so I didn't start on that Friday. And then later in the season, Mike missed a day of practice because he was sick, and he started on that Friday. And at the time, yeah. I was like, this isn't fair. And I remember talking to my dad, and my dad was like, yeah, he doesn't have the same rules as you. He's the best player on the court. You know, you need to know where you fit in. You're like the guy that has to hustle his butt off just to get in the lineup. So you don't have the same, right. You know, and it's like, you know what? That is kind of life, man. You know, like, and it's unfair maybe to the Broncos a little bit, but like you said, they brought a lot of this on themselves. But I kind of get where the NFL is on this. This is a massive game between the Steelers and the Ravens. They don't want to miss that game. They're going to do everything they can to get that game in.
100%. Yeah. The story that I always think of in these situations is Buddy Bell telling Ronaldo, you're not good enough to be this much of an a-hole.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You didn't say a-hole.
Yeah. Because there's a mathematical equation. Is it worth it? You know, is it worth it with this guy?
Well, also,
how good is he?
How much of it plays in that the Broncos were not doing what the protocols are asking
them
to do?
Well, that's a huge part of it.
Right?
They're trying to make an example of him, right?
For me, that's everything. That's everything.
Yeah.
Like, you're not doing what you're supposed to. We're not going to reward you by pushing it back because you're not doing what you're supposed to. And I feel like that's
the Ravens strength coach, you know, was not doing what he was supposed to either. You know, like, there were broken...
Okay, tell me more about that, because I have to admit, like, there's been so much going on. It's hard to keep track of all the
Steelers
stories.
The Steelers-Ravens stuff is
so
deep.
So their trainer, what, was he going around without a mask on or something?
The reports are that he had symptoms and wasn't telling anybody and wasn't wearing a mask.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's and I feel like, you know.
Symptoms and not telling anybody.
But does it make a difference if it's players not doing the right thing opposed to the
The organization now.
Right, I guess.
I mean, the league's got to come down on the entire organization, and that's one of the things I've appreciated about the Chiefs. Like, when that union rep came in and didn't have his mask on, the Chiefs turned him in. You know, because you got to police this whole thing. At the end of the day, it's like they say with performance-enhancing drugs, you're responsible for what goes in your body, right? So you're responsible for what happens in your building. Right, Sam?
Yeah. No, 100%. 100%. And I also feel like everybody, look, like the virus can spread through anybody. So I get all that. But if you were to rank, like, the worst people to be breaking protocol, you know, I think it's, I don't know what order, but I think quarterback, head coach, strength coach. I think those might be the three, like, that you know, sort of touch the most.
Strength coach and trainer. People. I mean, yeah. You know, those guys, because they got their hands on every single person on the team.
Yeah, everybody's important. The virus can get through anybody, but those three, I think, probably, you know, if you're contact tracing, those are the people that are most likely to be in touch with the most people.
Well, don't you think teams are going to now, like, do what the Bills did, right? So what they're doing, the Bills, they're quarantining Jake Fromm. So they keep him quarantined. And then
a few teams are doing that.
Yeah, so they have Matt Barkley and Josh Allen practicing in Fromm participates in all the Zoom meetings and all the, you know, all that stuff, but they have him almost like right now, had him on a permanent quarantine. So if this was to happen and it infected their room and they had to have somebody out for contract tracing in the quarterback room, they wouldn't be in that Broncos situation because they have this quarterback.
There's another team that's doing that too, and I just was reading about it today and I can't remember who it is, but yeah, there's
the Eagles. Right, with Josh McCown.
And the other thing
that I'd be frustrated if I was the Broncos, I forgot his name, but their quarterback coach, they wanted to sort of activate him and let him play quarterback. You know, at least it would have been amazing. I would have loved to have watched it.
God, that would have been awesome. When they turned that down, I was so pissed.
Yeah. I don't understand. I mean, like, can we not make an exception in this situation? You know, like, because that rule was put in place, and I get it. So teams can't just, like, stash extra players as coaches. So that's where that rule came from. But you cannot make the argument with a straight face that that's what the Broncos were doing in that situation. So at that point, it does become, and again, I'm not sympathetic to the Broncos, you know, quarterback room or organizationally. But at that point, it does feel a little bit vindictive. You know what I mean? Like, at least, like, they would have got smoked either way. You know, that quarterback coach is not, you know, leading the Broncos to a win over the Saints. But, you know, at least, like, he knows the playbook. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like they could have let him do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NFL is trying really hard to make an example of somebody, and why not make an example of a team that's not going anywhere? Yeah. And that's unfair, too, but I think that the example kind of does need to be reinforced because, you know, winter is coming, and the numbers keep exploding.
In more ways than one.
Yeah. And so you've got to do everything you can to reinforce the entire league that this stuff cannot go on, and you'd rather do it with a team that's not in the middle of the, you know, the playoffs than a team that's a game like we're going to see on Tuesday night. So we'll see. Hey, Sam, thank you so much for the time, man. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Sounds good.
Sam Mellinger of the Kansas City Star. You can check out all of his work there. I know he'll be doing his minutes coming up here in just a little bit. We'll take a break. We'll talk with Adam Teicher about the Chiefs' win over the Bucks right after this.